Let's play some cards.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
This is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and professional broadcaster Paul Harris.
You're good, kid. But as long as I'm around, you're second best. You might as well learn to live with it.
You got to know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em.
Now, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
Welcome to the show and our continuing coverage of the 2012 World Series of Poker from the Rio in Las Vegas. I am Paul Harris along with Dennis Phillips, and our guests today include the First Lady of Poker, Linda Johnson, who will talk about a bathroom controversy in the first week of the series involving the ladies' room being changed into the men's room and being changed back to the ladies' room. Also, Marco Valerio from the Quad Jacks Network with a new database that they have set up that'll help you, if you're going out to play in the WSOP in a bracelet event, learn who your opponents will be at the table. But to start things off, Poker Hall of Famer Mike Sexton, one of our game's best ambassadors, best known as the host of the World Poker Tour broadcast for the last 10 years, and globally, he's the spokesperson for Party Poker. Mike has cashed 4 dozen times at the WSOP, including a bracelet in a stud 8 event in 1989 and a second place finish in that event last year. The day before we recorded this conversation with Mike, he had been two-tabling between the $3,000 buy-in heads-up no-limit hold'em PLO event and a $1,500 stud 8 event. He had incredible deep runs in both of those events, and we were always happy to have him sit down with us. Here is Mike Sexton.
Well, I appreciate it, guys. Always good to be with you.
Yesterday, as I was walking through with my media pass, checking out what was going on in some of the tournaments, I stopped for a second and looked over, and I saw Poker Hall of Famer Mike Sexton sitting right next to Poker Hall of Famer Linda Johnson, also at that table, Awais Ahmed, who was just on with us a couple weeks ago, and Jan Fisher, who, along with Linda and Mike, they're the three of the four people who started the Poker Gives charity. So I know
Don't you love these easy tables?
Yeah. Well,
I didn't like to see Linda and Jan popping over to my table, but I was doing fine before they got there.
But I was thinking, as I noticed who was at the table, I thought to myself, well, you've played a lot with Linda and Jan, so you know their games. So having them at the table, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
That's a bad thing, I think. It's a bad thing because Linda is such a good player. You don't want her at your table for sure. And Jan, of course, always complains how unlucky she is, so you don't mind having her. So.
Ouch!
And Awais, of course, has done pretty well for himself
in mixed events, too. Yeah.
So, you know, I mentioned that you were two-tabling because you were getting so deep. Not bad for a 65-year-old guy showing these young punks how to do it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, just 64. Don't put me up there.
Sorry,
there.
Sorry.
But yeah, I saw the schedule, and it looked like if you played 3 matches of the heads-up match, which started at noon on Tuesday, that I could enter late, like at 9 o'clock in the 8 or better stud tournament, which is the 1,500 buy-in tournament, which I definitely wanted to play because my best record out here in the World Series by far is at these stud 8 or better tournaments. In fact, probably as good or better than anybody's in terms of making final tables and cashes and wins, and I finished second in that event last year. So I definitely wanted to play it, so I won the 3 matches, and so at 9 o'clock I went and signed up. And played until 3 in the morning and got some chips the next day. Now, truthfully, last year at the World Series of Poker, if you played the late night event, you didn't come back until 3 o'clock the next afternoon.
Yeah.
And I knew the match started at 1 o'clock in the heads-up play for the fourth round match, but I thought I'd have a couple hours to play my match. If I lost it, you know, I'll be back in time for the 8 or better stud tournament. Well, it turns out they moved up the nighttime start times the next day to 2 o'clock instead of 3. So now that meant I may cut into some of my playing time. But so I win the fourth round match, and then I jump over and play a couple hours of my the 8 or better stud tournament, of course. And I went back and played another match, won that, and went back and played some more. So sort of a hectic day, and I lost my 6th match finally to Andy Frankenberger yesterday. And so then I jumped back into stud 8 or better, and now we're left with 23 players left in that tournament today. So I'm still alive in that tournament, but I'm on a short stack. But we'll see what happens.
Well, I mean, obviously, great play, playing both of them back and forth. But I got a question for you as a poker player. When you're going back to play the heads up, and you know you've got your stack over here in your second tournament, does that change your strategy? Does that change how you play? Even subconsciously, aren't you trying to figure some way to really put more pressure on?
Well, I think you do tend to play a little faster. If you know you're going to get blinded off for an hour or so in the tournament, So you play a pot or two when you are back there, you know, to try to accumulate chips so you can stand blinding yourself off a little bit there, you know. But, you know, I knew that was going to happen if I won my matches and got through it, and I was expecting it. But to me, it was worth it for the insurance that if I got knocked out in the fourth round, I'd have all day to play the eight or better stud, which I really wanted to play that tournament. So,
but you can't really run back and forth. I mean, if
no, in the heads up, you can't.
Yeah, right. If, I mean, if they were full ring events, maybe you could exactly. do that, play a few hands here and there. Yeah. But
when you're playing heads up, you just have to play the heads up match and forget the other tournament.
Yeah.
Then when the match is over, you go back to the other tournament. That's all there is to it.
And see how much damage has been done to your stack.
Yeah,
pretty
yeah.
much.
Wasn't that much actually? Because. Sadly, I was knocked out quick by Frankenberger, so it did. So I got back there pretty quick. I didn't miss a lot. So,
what are your plans for the rest of the summer? You know, actually, before we get into that, there used to be 10K championships at the World Series of Poker for pretty much every different kind of poker game. But for some of them, like Stud and Stud 8 and PLO 8 or better, they've knocked the buy-in on those championships down to 8K. They don't even call them championships anymore. Do you think that's in the hopes of growing the field, and do you think that's a good idea?
I think it's a very good idea. I think it's very smart. You get more entries that way, more people have an opportunity to play. I like the 5K events better than the 10s. We still got about three or four 10K events outside the main event. You know, there's a 10K Pot Limit Omaha, a 10K Horse, and some others that, you know, that I'm probably going to play those. But I think it's pretty good to cut the entry fees back. You can see the number of entries is down a little bit from last year. I think it's going to be down straight across the series. I just don't think the money's there like it used to be. And, you know, people just can't stand all the big buy-in tournaments that they're having nowadays.
And you've done the same thing on the WPT with the buy-ins are down for a lot of events. And you're actually getting more people showing up at most of these venues, right?
Yeah, well, certainly. And it's not just the buy-in. When you lower the buy-in for an event, it means you can run so many more satellites. Because a guy will take a chance to put up $200 or $300 to play a satellite rather than $1,000 to play a satellite, for example. So I definitely think it's a smart thing to do. I like the $3,500 buy-in tournaments we have on the WPT. And honestly, in my opinion, outside Las Vegas and Los Angeles, I don't think there should be any 10K events on the World Poker Tour. I think they should all be 5K or $3,500 where people can afford to play.
Well, that seems to be the trend everywhere. I mean, the circuit events for the WSOP are now $1,600, whether they're being held in Durant, Oklahoma, or Council Bluffs, or wherever it happens to be. You get outside of Las Vegas, it makes common sense. But I love the analogy you just did about the satellites, because so many people right now are more money conscious, doing a little bit better bankroll management, and to get into these bigger tournaments via a satellite. If you have a $1,600 event, 10% of a $160 buy-in gets in. Versus if you have a $10,000, you got to put $1,000 up. Going to be hard to do.
Yeah. Right.
So, no, great analogy there, and I think you're spot on that particular one.
You just finished up season 10 of the WPT. Congratulations on that. What's next? You guys are already planning number 11.
Yeah, they've already got the schedule out for season 11, and pretty exciting. We're actually going to Philadelphia at Parks Casino for our first event of season 11. It's in early August, you know, we've never been there before. This year we had a couple new stops on the tour in Jacksonville. What a great place that is. The Best Bet Casino in Jacksonville. If you've never been there, boy, go down to that place. That's the nicest poker room as you'll ever go into.
Oh, yeah?
Really a nice room and big. Mm-hmm. You know, like 70, 80 tables. I mean, twice
as
big as Bellagio, for example. It's a big poker room. And
never been there.
And, I mean, as nice a table and nice a chairs, space between tables, 1,000 televisions in the place. I mean, to me, it's just a great place, and we really enjoyed that venue down there. And, of course, we're adding overseas events all the time. Paris came back this year for a televised event. Venice, Italy was a televised event. So it's been pretty exciting to see the expansion of the WPT worldwide, in my mind, and gives players from all countries an opportunity to play in events.
Well, poker as a whole is expanding. It's going nuts. I mean, you've got new states opening up casinos. You've got new regulations that are allowing increased play everywhere. Ohio just opened up their first one, their second, their third, and the fourth are going to be opening up here yet within the next 12 months. Other countries are doing the very same thing. What's the end? I mean, how big is the WPT going to be?
Well, you know, who knows that answer? I mean, poker's expanding globally, obviously faster than in the U.S. right now. And you know, when it really takes fire in Asia down there, who knows what's going to happen to poker and how much it's going to explode. And, of course, all of us are anxiously waiting to see what happens with the online poker world, of course. When it comes back and gets legalized and regulated here in the States, you're going to see a poker explosion again in terms of guys being able to play satellites in their homes for $50 to win seats in WPT events and World Series events. And you're going to see a mega boom in live tournaments, the big tournaments, because people can qualify online for $50. And I think every venue will be completely sold out. However many they can seat is how many players will be in the tournament.
So that's going to be similar to what happened after 03, you know, the moneymaker effect, whatever you want to call it. It's going to do the same thing again when this happens?
I agree. I think we're going to have another poker explosion just like we did, you know, 6 years ago.
So how big is the main event going to get?
Well, the main event's going to be too big. I mean, they're not going to be able to have the main event, honestly, in my opinion, here at the World Series of Poker in one go because there'll be too many players if they allow qualifying online. And I've said a long time ago, in my opinion, the World Series of Poker would be smart to go to regional events and European events where you have to qualify to even get to Las Vegas to play in the World Championship of Poker.
Hmm.
So you win your seats somewhere regionally and you qualify and then you come to the World Series of Poker main event. And, you know, maybe you have just 2,000 players in the main event here in Las Vegas and qualify another 1,000 by satellites here or something, so you might have 3,000 or 4,000. But you won't be able to seat 12,000, 15,000 players. You can't do it. So, you know, I think they would be smarter to go regional and where it's really prestigious, where now you've got to earn your way to Las Vegas to even get in the main event of the World Series of Poker.
Which they do a little bit now with the circuit event and its national championship.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing that on a small-time basis, but if you really wanted to make the World Series of Poker extremely prestigious, you make everybody win something or get to a final table or make the money somewhere to even be allowed to come to the main event of the World Series
with
of Poker.
The exception of Hall of Fame people. They should automatically qualify.
I agree with that.
Now, not only is
and w- former final tablist.
Well, there is.
We'll get you in there too, Dennis.
With the WPT increasing its presence in Europe, and you're involved in Party Poker, which is one of the top sites in Europe for online players, do you see a difference or an increase in quality with European players? Because they were several years behind us. Poker was always the American game, and the Europeans have really only come on board, I guess, in the last 5 to 10 years. Have you seen their skills grow?
Oh, no question about it. I think European poker players are so good now. Every country has great players now. You know, we always used to think the U.S. just had all the best players. Well, believe me, all you got to do is see the number of Europeans that come to the World Series or come to the WPT and look at the results. And percentage-wise, for the players that enter from those places, their results are astounding. And these guys are tremendous players. And, you know, there's no geographic location anymore that has dominance in the poker world, in my opinion. I mean, every country thinks they have the best players. And, you know, it's just great to see that poker's just exploding everywhere and you have great players everywhere.
So while we're having this downtime in online poker in the U.S. since Black Friday and until we get back to the point where it's legal, regulated, and legislated, are the Europeans now at an advantage because they can play on Party Poker or the other?
They're definitely an advantage, especially for younger players, because they have an opportunity now to increase their skills very dramatically like the online players here in the States did for a long time. So I definitely think they have an advantage right now if you can play online poker regularly. And, you know, all you've got to do is just look at any big-time tournament now. And let's face it, you know, youth prevails out on the World Poker Tour. I can guarantee you that.
Except for a certain 64-year-old two-tabler.
Yeah, but, you know, it's funny. In the Stud 8 or better tournament, you know, I was playing the heads-up match play tournament, the Hold'em. You know, and maybe with 64 players left, I was probably the only guy in the field over 30 or 35, you know.
Yeah.
And then I jump over to the 8 or better stud tournament, and there's nobody in the field under 35. It's amazing the age difference in those two tournaments.
You're right.
I got a question for you. Everybody, the level of play for No Limit Hold'em has just grown and grown and grown and grown. Now when you sit at a table, there usually isn't anybody that's weak. Everybody knows what, you know, a button play is and continuation bets and all these other things and all these standard plays. Do you try to concentrate on non-No Limit? Do you see maybe PLO making huge gains now because it's got a little weaker field? People aren't quite as used to the variances and the different play there. If you're a listener wanting to concentrate on some aspect, would you stay away from No Limit?
I wouldn't stay away from No Limit, but I definitely think if you play poker seriously, I think it's to your advantage to play multiple games. It's always boggled me because I've lived in Las Vegas for years, and I see in the casinos the same guys go to the same game every single day, you know, the Limit Hold'em specialist, the No Limit specialist, the Stud High-Low Split specialist, and that's all they ever play. You know, but in my mind, if you're a professional poker player, you play seriously, it's far to your advantage to learn all the games, because one day you'll come in and there's two guys in ties and suits playing Hold'em, and you want to be able to play Hold'em because that's where the the live ones are, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, one day you might come in, they might be playing seven-card stud. So now you want to sit down. You know, as a poker player, you want to play where the live ones are, where the amateurs are, the guys just having a good time that you expect to lose the money at the table. And so guys, to just specialize, if poker is your profession, it just never made sense to me at all. And I believe the greatest poker players in the world are the guys that play the multiple games very well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Do you get to sit down in live cash games ever?
I do. I play in some games over in Beverly Hills and some private games that are very fun for me, and I enjoy those very much. And but honestly, I don't have to grind playing poker anymore like I did for 25 years. And
yeah.
So when I do get to play, like at the World Series every once in a while, it's fun for me because I just don't have an opportunity to play that much tournament poker. I play some events on the World Poker Tour now, and obviously here at the World Series I play some, you know. How much, I don't know. Like, I've been three grueling days in a row for me here. I'm probably, as much as I want to play tomorrow's tournament, I'm probably going to take a day or two off because it's just wearing me out. You know, the young guys definitely have an advantage around here.
Yeah, stamina's a factor.
So when you say you have fun playing these, is fun another word for profitable?
Yeah, obviously you want to be profitable. That's another word for it. But it's tough to make money around here. Let's make clear about that. I don't care who you are. It's tough to make money at the World Series of Poker. And if you've done it, you can pat yourself on the back because a lot of good players floating around here. But, you know, everybody wants to test themselves against the best. Everybody wants to go for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Try to grab those bracelets, and we all dream about it as poker players. And I don't care how many times you've done it before, you know, you still have fun and you want to do it again. And for all the pain and suffering you go through and you get knocked out and you take the bad beats and blah, 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 it just takes once or twice to get to that final table to experience that thrill. And Dennis can tell you better than anybody, you know, and you understand, you know, why you're the rat on the maze chasing the rainbow, because when you get there, it makes it all worthwhile.
Oh, yeah. It's awesome, isn't it? Unbelievable when you make a final table, let me tell you. It is awesome.
Mike, you and Vince Van Patten have been doing the WPT for 10 years now. Vince, of course, is a poker player as well, more of a recreational player than most of the people who are coming to the WSOP now and playing in WPT events. But a couple of years ago, you added Tony Dunst, who his segments on there are terrific. His analysis and really getting into players' minds, I think, has been a great addition to the show. He recently had a deep run in a WPT event. Last year, you made a final table. Vince hasn't done either of those things. Is there a rivalry between you and Tony and you and Vince and Tony and Vince?
No, I don't think so. You know, I'm pulling for Tony every time he gets there. He made a final table earlier this season, and everybody on the whole staff and crew were so excited for him because, you know, he was really felt like he was really under pressure, you know. I mean, he was mind-boggled that he actually got that job without real poker credentials. I mean, the guy, you know, had mild success in his poker career and tournament play anyway, you know, so he really felt, you know, that he just had to make a final table somewhere because he was playing about all the events, and he finally did it, and everybody was excited for him, just like they were happy for me when I made it, and we'll be thrilled if Vince ever gets there too. But Vince doesn't play as many as Tony and I, and Tony plays more than I, and I play, of course, a lot more than Vince. So
yeah.
But we're you know, we bond. It's a, you know, it's a good crew, a good staff, and, you know, we're all pulling for each other.
I want to switch things a little bit. I got a question for you. I haven't asked anybody else, but I think you're probably more qualified to answer this than anybody. One of the problems we seem to have with poker yet is there's still this corporate wall. We can't seem to get any of the mainstream sponsors to do it. You're not going to see a Ford or a Pepsi or a whatever in here sponsoring the World Series of Poker or the WPT or anything. How do we break through that? There's millions of people playing poker. Why are they not backing it?
Well, it's, you know, you say that, but the World Poker Tour, we had Budweiser as a sponsor one year. We had Southwest Airlines as a sponsor one year. So we did have key sponsors before. And I think it's just such a gray area in terms of corporate people's minds. They're scared to death that the religious people or somebody's going to boycott their products or say, they're supporting gambling per se. You know, we don't want to endorse that kind of thing. And they're afraid of that. But I believe those banners could get eliminated, or barriers, I mean, if indeed we legalize and regulate online poker, which will bring a little bit change of attitude, I think, in the corporate people's minds. At least we're all hoping so. But, you know, millions of people play poker, so
yeah.
I think somebody's going to step up to the plate here once it gets legalized and regulated and it's okayed by the government, et cetera, where there's not that gray area or that stigma anymore attached to gambling.
Well, if you look at a lot of our corporate leaders, our CEOs, they play poker for these major companies.
And more than two out of three of our states in this country, I think it's something like 38 or 40 states, now have legal poker venues, casinos, racetracks, whatever they are.
Yeah.
Poker is mainstream.
Okay, other than Utah. And Hawaii. Moving the other way.
Yeah, Utah, Hawaii.
You know, boom, you're right.
No, I agree. It's so ridiculous. If, you know, as you guys know, it's unbelievable how Washington works and their mindsets, you know, and you know, how you can go in a casino and play poker and you can't play in your own house. I mean, think how mind-boggling and dumb
that
is.
Yeah, no, it's just horrible.
You know, it's insane, you know, when you think about it. And but hopefully we'll get all that changed and online poker will become legalized and regulated, and then corporate sponsors may start coming back into the fold.
Well, on my soapbox again, we were with the PPA. You were doing it. I was doing it. So many of the other pros, because we wanted to have it legalized, regulated, safe for players, the whole bit. So what do they do in the government? Because it's not regulated and safe for players and all this other, then they come again. Do your damn job in Washington, okay?
Yeah.
Sorry.
And the problem is the politicians – they're all so politically oriented, and they're scared to death, you know, to get reelected. And if people start going against them, you know, they won't get reelected. So nobody wants to touch it with a 10-foot pole as a politician. That's the problem, honestly, if you want to know the truth about it. And this is an election year, of course, and so nobody's getting close to it now. And, you know, it is sort of a shame. It's just ridiculous.
But, yeah. All right, let's change subjects here.
Yep, sorry.
We haven't had a chance to talk to you since the death of Amarillo Slim. As a poker veteran, share some thoughts on Slim with us, and maybe a story or two, if you would.
No, I'll be happy to. Slim, truthfully, for those that never knew him, was the most colorful character in poker history by far. I mean, this guy had a gift of gab that was stronger than Muhammad Ali and Minnesota Fats combined. That's how strong he was in terms of talking. And, you know, I've got some great Slim stories. Personally, you know, he started the Super Bowl of poker back in the 80s, 1979, I believe it was, and ran through 1991. And for years, that was the only tournament outside the World Series of Poker. He was the first one to step up to the plate and put on a tournament. And it was a big event, a huge event. It was up in Lake Tahoe most of the time up there. And in 1981 was the first time I went to a tournament and played poker, and I went to Super Bowl's Amarillo Slim's. And my first picture was me cashing in the Amarillo Slim Super Bowl of Poker. Now, for years, Slim only played three places in this tournament, first, second, third. Think about that, if that happened today.
Wow.
Oh, only paying three places. That's what he did. That's all he believed in. You know?
Now, how many people were in it?
Well, you know, we only had, you know, 80 to 100, 150 players, you know, in his tournaments, you know, maybe 200.
But still
only paid three places.
Yeah. That's less than 2%.
You know? Yeah, yeah. And so I finished third in one of the tournaments. I was happy and got my picture with Slim. I still have it in my house, you know. But Amarillo Slim... you know, this guy was in four Hall of Fames. He was on the Tonight Show like 11 times. And no poker player's been on the Tonight Show since, probably, you know. But he was a fantastic guest on the show. I can remember one time, this was back in 1985, when all the high-stakes players, Eric Drake had put together this cruise on the QE2 over to London, flying back on the Concorde. It was the first time anything like that had been done. All the big players went. Chip Reese, Doyle Brunson, Puggy Pearson, Amarillo Slim, Telly Savalas went with us. Bob Stupak went with us. All these guys. And I was broke back then, didn't have any money. And they ran a satellite at the World Series of Poker for a seat on this cruise. And it came down to me and Oklahoma Johnny Hale. And I wanted to go so bad. And Johnny Hale was rich. He could go if he wanted to, you know.
Yeah.
I had to win this to get on it. And we got it all in. I had ace-seven of clubs. They had ace-jack. And I spiked a seven and won this trip. And to this day, it might be my best vacation ever. Just fantastic.
Yeah.
I love it.
But anyway, Slim was on this trip. And when we were in London, after we cruised over, before we flew back on the Concorde, all of us were going to Wimbledon one day. So now, they had a little bus for us, just like a half-size bus, 15 of us were going out there. And I'm sitting right in the front row of the bus, and Amarillo Slim is standing up, holding court, you know, talking his gift to gab and BSing everybody and entertaining all of us. As he usually does, he said, well, finally he says, who are we waiting on anyway? And somebody said, Mickey Appleman. And if you have to know Mickey Appleman, he looks like a Harpo Brothers Marx guy with his hair strangly everywhere. And Slim said, oh, he must be up blow-drying his hair, you know, just making a joke. Yeah. So finally Mickey comes and gets on the bus. Now the bus driver starts making a U-turn in the middle of the street. And I mean traffic is screeching to a halt for both sides. We all thought we were going to get hit for sure. I was sitting right in front of Slim. His knuckles turned white holding onto the pole like that. He was really scared, you know. And finally we turned around and we're all safe and nobody hit us. And Slim turns and looks at that bus driver. He said, pal, he said, let me tell you something. He said, if you ever want to quit driving this bus, he said, let me know. He said, I'd love to stake you playing poker because you sure as hell ain't afraid to move in on him, he said. It's the greatest line I ever heard, I'll tell you the truth.
That's great. Can I just take you back to the cruise for a second?
Oh. Yeah.
Once you qualified and you got on there, what was the game and what were the stakes?
Actually, the game that I played, we had a 50 and 100, they had a better stud game going every day. They had a bigger game going at 2 and 4, but you know, me and Ron McMillan was on this boat, and Telly Savalas loved playing high-low split, so he played with us every day. This guy was a gem, I might add. You know, you talk about these Hollywood superstars, and he was like the biggest, you know, with Kojak and the number one show and all that back then, and he was the most – this guy would be losing every day playing poker with us. And everybody on the boat would come up to him at some time during the cruise. Can I have a picture? Oh, yeah, baby. He had him sit on his lap, who loves you, baby, all this stuff. Never turned down one autograph, one photo, and I really admired him for that. And, you know, when I came up to mild celebrity status in poker, I swore to you I was never going to turn down a picture, an autograph, because I saw him do it.
Yeah. That's, you know, yeah. To have an inspiration like that is good.
Yeah, he was good.
And especially if he's giving money away.
Yeah, but actually, you know, he became a good player. You know, when I first met Telly Savalas, it was a funny story. It was at the Dunes years ago, and I was playing in a 30-60 high-low split 8 or better game. And now, this is like, I can't remember, it was like 1979 or 1980, way back when. And so Telly Savalas goes by, and everybody, oh, there's Telly Savalas, you know. And he stops and talks to the floor man at the top. Next thing I know, the floor man comes over to me. Now, I lived in North Carolina at the time. I didn't even live in Las Vegas. And the floor man comes up to me, he says, Mike, he said, can I ask you a favor? I said, yeah, what is it? He said, well, Telly Savalas, he said he wants to watch the 30-60 high-low split game, and he wanted to know if there's somebody he could watch. And I said, you'd be the perfect one. He said, would you mind if Telly Savalas would watch you play poker? I said, well, you kidding? I said, that'd be great. He pulled up a chair at midnight. He had his family with him. He sent them all to bed. He came down at midnight and watched this 30-60 high-low split. And nobody quit the game because Telly Savalas was there.
Wow.
And he sat there till 7 o'clock the next morning. I'll never forget it till I die. I won $2,800 in a game. I was so happy. But Telly Savalas, and we became friends after that, you know. And he was a poker guy. And he ended up getting third in the 8 or better stud tournament at the World Series one year. So
wow.
Just shows you.
Were you showing him cards? Was he sweating your hands?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I showed him every time and explained to him why I did this and what was happening. And he was a student paying attention, you know. Never said a word unless somebody talked to him or, you know. Yeah. But he was really watching the game, and he became a much better player that night.
And I'm sure you split the $2,800 with him.
I did not. I wanted to ask him to borrow $2,800 more, to tell you the truth. But no.
Yeah, Telly didn't stake him.
Yeah.
Telly should have paid Mike for the lessons.
No. Nobody else was leaving the table, including somebody that you were taking chips from, because Telly was there.
That's true. Well, Mike, it's always a pleasure talking to you. Congratulations on your success in the early part of this year's WSOP, and continued success on that, and we look forward to talking to you again next year.
Well, I appreciate it. Dennis, I was going to ask you about the are you playing in the one-drop tournament here?
Nah.
I mean, that's the buzz of the World Series of Poker here. That's all the big players talking about is the one-drop and how they're figuring out how they can piece themselves in or get in or something, but we're talking about the $1 million buy-in poker tournament. Now, who would ever thought there was $1 million buy-in poker tournament?
No kidding. It's absolutely awesome, and it probably will be beat sometime in the future. They'll have even a bigger one. But what I love about it is Guy's got this thing set up now where 10% of the buy-in is going to a great charity that he founds, the One Drop, for better water for the people around the world. I just think it shows, again, what kind of a player the poker players are. Forget that backroom cigar smoking, whatever the heck. You have everybody from a Matt Damon to who knows who playing this thing and playing it for charity. And the number one fundraiser right now in the U.S. is poker. And you're with Poker Gives, who I do want to give a plug to, too. It's just awesome. That's what poker playing is about.
Well, I agree with that. And you asked before how we're going to get corporate sponsorship in the poker world.
There you go.
Obviously, I think the charity aspect of poker now, you know, as you said, it's the number one way to raise money for fundraisers now ahead of golf tournaments. And it's just fantastic. All poker players can be proud of that, I think. And I do think at some stage, no matter who is anti-gambling or who's against it, you know, people are going to step back and say, whoa, look at these poker people giving millions of dollars to these worthwhile charities. You know, that's a good thing. And hopefully corporate America will stand up and come into poker. And I think they're only going to do it with the charity aspect involved, because they're going to contribute to something if they know a percentage of that is going to a worthwhile charity. So I think that's our best hope to get big business into poker.
Okay, but Dennis didn't answer the question. Are you playing
the one drop, Dennis? Well, Talk to your man Gee. Maybe he'll put you in. He's putting in about 15 guys. Who knows? You might get on the list.
Okay, so now let's turn it around. Mike, are you playing?
Actually, I think I am going to play, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah, I'm very fortunate that I think I have a good friend that says I should be playing in that tournament. And I said I'm available. So hopefully he's going to stick me in there. We'll see. But it'd be a lot of fun if I could get in.
It wouldn't be possible for most players to do this without having somebody staking at least part of it, right?
Yeah, very few guys can afford to put up $1 million, poker players anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know any that can really stand it on their own. I hear guys pooling their money together and everybody looking for, very wealthy business people that are just looking for a sweat and might want to contribute some money to charity. And so this could be a way for them to do it as well. But certainly, whether a guy has the money to buy in, whether he's getting staked, or whether he pieces himself out, anybody that plays in that tournament is a blessed poker player and has got to be fortunate for everything they've got in life. No,
absolutely. And I hear they're approaching 40 people now. I think they're going to max it out. What was it, 45 or 48 were going
to Well, I'm willing to make a good bet that they max it out at 48.
I think they will.
Now, wait
too.
A second. They say they're no more than 48. Are you telling me if somebody comes by with another $1 million and there's going to be the 49th player, they're going to say, sorry, and Gee's going to say, no, I'm sorry, we won't
That's
accept the
said,
money.
That's what they've said, but I'm like you. Can you imagine 10 guys in line wanting to get in? We're talking about another $1.5 million going to the charity, and they're going to shut them out. I don't think so either. But
I don't think so.
I think they're just saying that to hope guys go ahead and sign up quick so they can get a good list up there, you know.
Well, there you go.
I have one challenge for you.
Okay.
The record right now, I believe, for the WSOP for most caches is 10 that Alan Kessler did in 2010. You're 2 out of the first 3.
Yeah,
come
it's
on
true.
Now.
But I don't just see myself playing that many events. I mean, you know, I may play up to 15. You know, or 18, but I got no chance to play 40 events, I don't think. So it's unlikely I'll crack that record, but if I just had a couple more caches, I'll be happy. So
that'd be great.
As long
well,
as one of them's high.
No. Well, there's only 23 left in this one.
Huh?
You're right in the middle
of
this, right?
Yeah, well, I got the hunt, but I don't have any chips, though, but maybe I'll get some quick. Who knows?
There you go.
Good luck with all of it, Mike. It's always a pleasure, and thanks for everything you do for our game.
I appreciate it. Paul, Dennis, always good to be with you guys, and anytime you need me to come on the rest of the series, let me know. I'll be around.
Thank you so much.
You got it.
Mike Sexton, PartyPoker.com, WPT, the World Poker Tour, and a pretty good poker player himself as well, and the greatest ambassador for our game. Joining us here at the final table at the World Series of Poker at the Rio in Las Vegas. With Dennis Phillips, I'm Paul Harris. This is 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com. Don't forget our podcast available on our website, FinalTableShow.com. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show. I'm Paul Harris along with Dennis Phillips, and this is our continuing coverage of the 2012 World Series of Poker at the Rio in Las Vegas.
We are joined by one of my favorite poker players, Linda Johnson, the number one lady of poker, one of the original original for Poker Gives, and now in the Poker Hall of Fame in there last year with Barry. I was up on stage when she got inducted, and I'm always thrilled to death when you can sit down here with us and we can talk.
Well, it's nice just to be able to look at you guys because usually it's over the phone.
That's right.
And you guys are mighty good looking, I'll say.
Oh, thank you very much. You may want to check your glasses. Anyway, the reason Linda is sitting with us is probably not good news for her. It's because she just got knocked out.
It isn't. Now, wait a minute. She has lasted the day two. She has cash. She made the final two tables. It's not a bad thing. It just could have been better.
Just got knocked out of the stud eight event.
It almost never happened. So 13th place is pretty good. As I said, it almost never happened. I actually came down here and unregistered for the tournament because I was irritated about the ladies' bathroom situation. I don't know if you're aware of that, but they had taken the ladies' bathroom, made it into man's, which meant that the women had to walk a lot further.
Now, we're talking about the bathrooms that are right in the center of the hallway outside the pavilion room.
Yes.
Right where all the poker players go as they're walking to and from events. And there are two bathrooms there, and they had covered up the women's sign and made it men only for both bathrooms.
Correct. Which meant that the women had to walk a lot further than the men. Now, that becomes a problem, especially for older ladies who have to go sometimes in the middle of the tournament, because now we have to miss a lot more hands. than a man would have to, because we have to walk a lot further to the restroom. You know, plus I don't think it's sending a good message to the women, you know. So I texted Jack Effel, and I said, Jack, I've just unregistered from the tournament, and I told him why. I said, I'm just not happy about it. And he said, well, can you meet with me? And I said, sure. So he brought with him one of the convention people and asked me to explain what my issues were, and I told him those two things, you know, twofold. You have to send a message that women are appreciated here, and second, you know, physically, it's not convenient to have to go a lot further in the middle of a tournament. And he said, well, let me talk to the, I think it was the hotel manager who makes the decisions about logistical things like that. And he said, if I get this resolved by 7 o'clock, will you play? And I said, yes, because I came here to play and I'd like to play. But I said, you know, sometimes you really have to make a protest. And you know, I said, I'm not trying to issue an ultimatum by any means. I think the World Series is amazing. I can't believe how well they coordinate stuff. But this was a personal issue for me, and I didn't, you know, it meant not playing. So to make a long story short, I met with the hotel manager and explained it to him. And I got a text back right around 7 o'clock that things would be changed and that he would put the ladies' room back where it belonged. And so now we have reclaimed land. And and so I entered the tournament. I entered late. I entered on the break. And cash for 13th. So it's not so bad.
No, that's pretty good. And I just want to add two things to this. Number one, I can't tell you how many times on this show we've emphasized the importance of getting more women to play poker.
Uh-huh.
We're only up to like 3 or 4% of the field in the main event.
Correct.
Still women. And it's been that way for 15 years.
Uh-huh.
So we need to get more women in. It does send a bad message.
But it sends a message. And I know it's not their intention. And that's what they told me. They said, you know, our intention is not to make women feel unwanted or anything else. And, you know, their intention obviously is that there are a lot more male players, and they're trying to solve the situation. I said, trust me, I know that's not your intention, but it is a perception by a lot of women.
Yeah.
It's a perception. And so, you know, that counts.
Here's the other point I was going to make. Substitute the word handicapped for women.
Ooh.
And they would never have been allowed to do that.
Uh-huh.
If you had said, we're taking away the handicapped bathroom because we have too many guys here who are playing who are able-bodied and we need that bathroom for them, you would have had lawyers in here closing the place down.
Right. But there's been lots of tweets about it, you know, up until the time they changed it, a lot of unhappy women, and now there's been a lot of happy women. Believe it or not, the first break that after they made the change, the women were in there, and we were having a party almost. It was, you know, everybody was happy, you know. It's such a little stupid thing, but, you know, it just means something to us, I guess, you know.
Well, I'm telling you, we harped on this show a number of times. We've had other people like Nolan Dalla and others that have come in here and tried to come up with some way to get more women involved in this.
Uh-huh.
We have half of the population, over half of the population of the U.S. that are able and quite capable of playing poker. I've played against some tremendous women.
Mm-hmm.
There is no doubt about it. We've got to find a way to get in there so that 3, 4, 5% is doubled or tripled.
Yep.
Yeah,
I agree.
And, you know, in the local card rooms, you do see probably 25 to 30, even sometimes a third of the players, you know, in the smaller games are women. I think it comes down to, you know, financial reasons. And a lot of women are homemakers and they have the children to take care of. And, you know, it's a tough economy, tough for the men, too. But I agree with you. And I don't know what the answer is, but I would definitely like to see more women out here. I do a lot of seminars for women. I think women are becoming better players, a lot of them. Like, if you, you know, the men are going to play, I guess, some of them in the ladies' tournament. They're going to be surprised that there's a lot of women who are going to kick their butts.
We had Maria Ho and interviewed her a little bit ago. And one of the things she said is that, you know, if somebody doesn't recognize me and then they play against me with, like, a typical, you know, perceiving somebody that they can walk all over and everything like that. And then she kind of smiled, and I went, oh, I pity the person that's trying to walk all over you.
Yeah.
You will take them to the cleaners.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I had a great time at Bay 101 because I had all the 20-year-old kids. And, you know, of course, I'm an older woman, and they tried to run over me.
So. They profile you.
So,
somebody
yeah, and I don't blame them. I mean, you know, I don't blame them for trying, but...
You set
the message early.
you know about the house that Maria is staying in this summer with Vanessa Russo, Vanessa Selbst, and Liv Bari?
Wow.
Wouldn't you say that that's Probably got.
I'll take that house against Panorama Panorama Tower. You know, the same foursome.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, and I would say, you know, any year you can take those four and put mm-hmm. them in the World Series of Poker. There's your favorite house to win a bracelet.
Yeah, yeah, probably. I'd take them against four. I mean, you know, if they play in the same number of events. So.
Yeah. So. How many events will you play this year?
Well, I'm thinking probably. Seven or eight, so mostly the horse and the Raz and Omaha type events. So, the No Limit. I love No Limit. I have a good record in No Limit tournaments, but it's hard for me to really devote enough time to play for like the main event. You know, I just couldn't play for 14 days straight with other things going on. So. But so I'll play mostly the some of the limit games, the stud eight and that kind.
Well, now, a couple of the No Limits are going to be kind of interesting this year. They've got the reentry one with two starting days. It should have a massive field.
Right.
So you're looking at a $1,500 entry to possibly $1 million first prize.
That's true, type. Yeah.
You know, so you know that's one that's going to be tempting for a lot of people to play in. A four max maybe, something totally different, a different way to play it. Are there any of those new changes or different ones that you're looking at?
You know, and actually, I didn't think about the reentry from the fact that the prize pool is going to be that big for $1,500. So I just might take a shot at that one. That's
oh,
a good
dang.
Point.
Dang. I don't need any more competition.
What date is that?
Yeah. This weekend.
So, this weekend. So,
yeah. Prediction on the main event this year?
$5,800.
$5,800. You think we're going to be down from last year?
I do.
Why?
I don't want it to be. I hope I'm absolutely wrong. I just... You know, I'm not seeing quite as many people in the hallways here. I'm not, and I think one reason is that Europe and other areas of the world have become, they've expanded their poker scene so much that a lot of people who did come here because it was their only venue are not having to come here. They can get action closer to home. And so I think we won't have as many Europeans probably. As I said, I hope I'm dead wrong.
Well, that's interesting because the WSOP has expanded into Europe, does five bracelet events there. Now they're expanding into Australia and Asia next year, and they're going to do five bracelet events there. Do you think that by franchising it out to other parts of the world, they're hurting the core events here at the Rio every summer?
Well, I mean, there's two ways to look at it. They could be creating more players, but I think the bottom line is people only have so much money. So, yes, I think it is hurting the core here because if you can only play in one $10,000 event and you play in the one in Europe, then, you can't come here. So, you know, it's all a matter of money and how much of it is expendable for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So. Well, I also wonder, though, people used to come here and they'd spend the entire time here. But now then they're up to 61 bracelet events. It's now expanded over 7 weeks. You know, can they come from Europe and spend 7 weeks? Here. Perhaps maybe they're coming here and only spending 2 or 3 weeks and they're, you know, and trying to pick it and want to be at the main event. I think you're going to see a gradual buildup all the way through June until July. And I hope I am, too. I don't know for sure. Yeah. The over-under that they posted on the sports book, I think, was 68 and change, 68-33 or something like that.
I better go get down on the under then, if I thought it was 58.
Yeah.
So. Oh, and how interesting. I just found out that you can bet on yourself in the tournaments if you make it to, you know, like day three, like today. Yeah. So did you know that?
No, I didn't. Yes, I didn't know that.
Yes, they put a line out every day on day three.
On the final, whatever the final day is of an event.
Yes.
So if it's a two-day, it's the second day or whatever.
So like all 23 players who started today had odds, and you could actually bet it here at the Rio Sportsbook.
Wow.
So, you know, so my strategy, had I really thought about it, is I think that they're undervaluing the lower stacks and overvaluing the top
probably.
Stacks.
Probably. That would
like,
make sense.
Like the top stacks today were like 5-1, but with 23 people, I wouldn't give 5-1 on any of them, you know?
Yeah.
And the lower stacks, some of them were 100-1. So my strategy, if I was going to do it, would be to bet the five lowest stacks, throw 100 on each one of them, and if it, you know, because they can come back and win when you only have 23 people. So,
certainly.
But, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did not know that.
And, and they weren't just doing that on the Stud 8 event, but that's going to be in
every
event here.
Yeah.
And at all of the other Harrah's properties in, I was going to say in St. Louis, in Las Vegas, you can get these bets down. They actually have an area in the rotunda here outside of the pavilion room where they're taking those bets, an extension of the sports book.
Wow. No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could have bet on you.
Well,
why didn't you
just saved $100 or 10.
You know what you really needed to get in on was the last longer between Linda Johnson and her really good friend Mike Sexton, which Linda won.
So, yeah.
I think Mike went out in, what, 16th or something?
He was right around there, yeah. I think he was kind of disappointed. I played with Mike yesterday. It was interesting because Jan Fisher, Mike, and I were at the same table, and it looked like a Poker Gives convention, you know. So, what a great guy. You know, anytime people ask me, who's your, like, favorite poker player in the world? It's Mike Sexton. He's just so awesome. I love him. So now, if I got to list five, Dennis Phillips would certainly be in the top five and maybe even in the top three. But Mike is number one in my book.
He's so good at sucking up the host.
Yeah, but you have a great number one there. Couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah.
We've had Mike. We've interviewed him. He's always got some great stories to talk about. And he is nothing but the great ambassador because he always talks positive, always talks about how it's going forward, always talks about how great it can be.
Before we let you go, get a plug in for Card Player Cruises.
Card Player Cruises.
I'm guessing for the next 2 months there are no Card Player Cruises.
That's
because
correct.
You're here with everything at the Rio.
Yes, we will.
But
we
in the
will
fall,
be resuming in September. We have two cruises out of Fort Lauderdale on the biggest ship in the world. And then we have a cruise in December that costs, for two people to go on this cruise, it's like $1,200 for a week. And so that one's to Mexico, so they can check it out at cardplayercruises.com.
And what games get played on board?
We play, our predominant game is 1-3 no limit. That's we probably have, you know, at least five tables of that going. We do usually have a 2-5, and we have a 10-20 Hold'em. We have 10-20 Omaha, sometimes higher. We have 4-8 Hold'em, 4-8 Omaha. You know, sometimes mixed, like a horse type game.
Or, I was going to say, we're all the mixed games. You're a mixed game specialist.
Yeah, we do that. So we spread whatever people want to. And the other thing I'd like to get a plug for is the Final Table Challenge. Have you guys checked that out?
No.
Okay.
Go ahead.
They have a booth here at the Rio, and a friend of mine actually, I have no financial interest in this whatsoever, but a friend of mine developed it, and what it is, it's like a fantasy camp for people who want to know what it's like to play at a televised final table. And so you walk into the studio, which is right across the street from the Rio, right behind the Palms, and there will be a set that looks like a WPT set, lights, cameras, everything, and they have an announcer who commentates, and they have the model who brings in the money. And when you're done, you get a DVD, and they show your whole cards. They're on the screen. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic. So it's a fantasy experience for poker players who want to know what it's like, or if they want to get practice for, you know, being under the lights and knowing.
Do you have to get six people together so you have a full table?
You could do it with two. You could do it with four. You could do it, you know. So you're not actually playing for money over there. It costs, I think it's like $249 or something like that, to have the experience. They will shuttle you over there, and they do the pre-interview. And they, you know, it's really a great fantasy item. So I hope people will check it out. Yeah. So you guys should do it. So if you want to go, well,
he already knows what it feels like.
He knows. Yeah. So.
But I will this year after I play my first.
Paul, if you want to go and have the fantasy experience, I'll make sure you get to do it for free. How about that?
You know, I'm going to have my fantasy experience because I qualified for the Bain event this year for the first time ever.
Oh, nice.
And so that's.
How'd you qualify?
Through a $200 double shootout at Harrah's in St. Louis.
Sweet.
Same way Dennis got there in 2008.
Ooh, lucky. All right.
So
words of wisdom to his first main event that he's going to play on. Can you give him one or two tips of what he should or shouldn't do?
Move your chips. Don't sit on them. Move them. You know, come over the top a lot of the young kids.
There you go.
You mean the ones who are three betting me because I'm the old bald guy?
That's it. So, wow, that's going to be exciting for you. There's so much energy, and you know, just playing in the main event is very cool. It is.
It is.
You know, I've done it. I love it. And, it's awesome. So I hope you do well.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So, oh, speaking of that, prop bets. Okay. So there's some interesting prop bets. Mike and I, you know, at the table yesterday, we're talking about, like he said, he asked me what I think the price is that someone over 40 will win. Because I guess you can get down on this bet.
Yes.
And I thought about it, and I said 12-1, but it's probably 9-1 or 8-1.
Well, I will tell you, because I follow him on Twitter, that Mike actually made the bet with Brian Hastings at 10-1, and Barry Greenstein already has taken a piece of Mike's action.
Uh-huh. So he likes the 10-1.
What do you think?
I don't know. I think it's pretty close, but I guess the price is just about right. You know, it's... That's probably about what the odds are, 10-1
again. Not too far, but I'm going back in my mind, and I'm still going back. What was the last player over 40 that won?
I don't know, because I was thinking Jerry Yang, but I don't think he was over 40
when he won.
Yeah.
No.
I don't think so. And you go back over 10 years, and Carlos and...
I don't think so.
Yeah.
And Jesus
wasn't?
No.
Yeah.
Wow, it's been a while.
Yes, and it's getting harder and harder because the younger kids are outnumbering the older people so much that, you know, I said 12 to 1, I think, is the price, but Mike
but
thinks it's a little.
Would you get action down at 10 to 1?
Would I? No.
it's the right number, but you're not putting a dime on it.
But what Mike's going to do, I think, is he's going to come in here on the seniors tournament and encourage them all, get in there and play, guys, get in there and play. You know, so stack the field a little bit.
Well,
so,
particularly
but when you start looking at it, look at the people who can win. There's a lot of them, you know. You guys and Mike and Chow and, you know, all these guys who have played for years, Dewey, and I don't know if Doyle's playing or not, but, you know, these guys, there's a lot of 40-year-olds who are and up who can play. So.
Oh, heck yeah.
So I don't really like to bet either side. So.
Yeah, but you know what Barry has said to us a couple of times on the show, Dennis, is
Barry, yeah.
He doesn't really feel confident in the no-limit world anymore. His confidence is in the mixed games, and particularly the limit games.
That's how I feel.
So when he plays an 8-game mix, he stays away from the big bet games and plays, you know, much better rounds in the limit games. So maybe even for a guy, when Barry Greenstein is saying that tells you a lot about how youth has affected no-limit hold'em culture in our poker world.
Right, right. I have confidence in my no-limit game, but the problem is, you know, you have to dodge bullet after bullet after bullet, and eventually one of them's going to hit you. You know, it's not, you know, it's just such a different game today, and they're constantly, you know, I love playing with the young kids, and I love the aggression and everything, but when they're constantly shooting at you, you know, it's hard to dodge.
Eventually a bullet hits.
Yeah.
It does.
Plus, stamina becomes a factor.
You know, believe it or not, I don't think I would have a problem with stamina. You know, I sleep like 5 hours a day, and I honestly believe somebody said, "Could you play for 40 hours straight still?" Because I have in the past. I said, "I think I can." You know,
choose not to.
I would put money down. Like if you guys want to make a bet, I'll bet you $10,000 I can play for 40 hours straight. So.
I am not taking that bet. I'll take part of your action, but I'm not going to bet against you.
Find us somebody who'll bet that.
Well, I'll tell you right now, you're not going to find anybody who'll take the bet unless you make it. You also had to win X percentage.
Okay. Well. Yeah.
Because anybody can sit at the table for 40 hours, semi-awake and losing.
Right.
that's not a challenge at all.
Exactly.
Well, we're really glad you stopped by, and congratulations again on your 13th place finish in the Stud 8 event.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And good luck with the rest of your summer.
Life is good. Thank you, guys. Right.
That's Linda Johnson, the First Lady of Poker, joining us here on the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris and our 2012 coverage of the World Series of Poker at the Rio in Las Vegas on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com and our podcasts on FinalTableShow.com. All right, next we talk with Marco Valerio. Marco is the guy behind QuadJax.com and QuadJax TV and the QuadJax database, which is something new that we wanted to talk to him about this year. Marco's been doing a lot of live coverage of his own of the WSOP in the hallways, right down a few booths from where we were set up for our broadcast setup. So here is Marco Valerio from QuadJax.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure. I can't believe I'm actually being interviewed for a change.
And you do realize the third hand dealt to me on event two here, a guy by the name of Russell Rosenblum got QuadJax against me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not for sure I like this interview.
You know, it's kind of funny because, you know, the name QuadJax, you know, came almost by accident. It's a funny story also about my Twitter handle, Agent Marco. If we have a moment, I'll get into that as well. But, you know, QuadJax, you know, we become known as QuadJax. But QuadJax is a standard poker term. It's the name of the hand. You know, it's not anything too irregular. So just last night, we were hanging out at a bar. I wasn't drinking because, like I was telling Paul, I've sworn off alcohol for the whole summer. But we were at a bar nonetheless.
Okay.
There's other things to do at a bar other than drink.
Absolutely.
Not many, but some. And we just heard someone exclaim, "QuadJax!" And we turn around. We have that instinct. Just like, oh, was someone talking about it? No, it's, you know, they were playing video poker. Someone did QuadJax. You know, so it's still weird. You know, it's still a little weird. QuadJax with this. And
for
that.
Our listeners who are not familiar with QuadJax.
How could they not be?
I realize it's
their
a possibility.
Loss. There you go.
But tell them about the various products of the QuadJax network.
Well, it's thank you. That's an excellent question. It's excellent because even though, like you say, I'm the man behind QuadJax and along with you know, Zach, my friend and partner, that question always kind of stumps me, and I'll tell you why. Because we really do so much We try to do so much. We've reinvented or done so many different things, so many other things since we began. We began in 2010, and I actually started right here at the World Series of Poker in 2010. I dove, whatever the proper conjugation is, I forget sometimes, right into poker media. I had played a little bit, and I met Zach, and he got me into poker media, and I started out by doing interviews here at the World Series of Poker in 2010. I was, very nervous, but very starstruck. These were people I saw on TV, and we were just recording interviews, video interviews, and putting them up there, trying to be, a little offbeat, a little different. Mm-hmm. And we did that for a while, did a lot of video interviews, and then Black Friday happened, and that changed everything for everyone, for the poker players, the poker industry, and for poker media, and for Quad Jacks as well. We went live on the night of Black Friday. We launched our own online radio program, and we became famous because we carried on an uninterrupted week-long live stream. I was awake for 60 hours in a row. I went live about the night of Friday the 15th, and collapsed in the early afternoon of Monday.
Wow. Probably seeing eight jacks by then.
Yes. Yes. And even though I collapsed, other people kept the program going. You guys remember how traumatic the event was.
Oh, yes. Sure.
And that was really, we had a following. I would call it a small but dedicated following before that event. But then when that happened, we really gained a lot of attention. And that's really, I think, the boost that we needed to this year. Mm-hmm. Be doing an online radio and video program as well. But now we are actually at the World Series of Poker. We're at the hallway just across the corner. We are crosstown rivals.
Yes, we are.
Friendly rivals.
Very friendly.
So I hope that was a decent summary.
No, that's a good answer. Yeah. And both Dennis and I have appeared on Quad Jacks. I did because I just happened to wander by the booth, and Marco asked me to sit down, and all of a sudden there I was as part of the live video and audio stream. You're putting in how many hours a day of continuing coverage yourself?
You mean this summer? It's funny because I think we try to do a day show, we try to do an evening show, and we try to do like at least maybe five or six, but last night it depends. Like if there's a reason to stay on the air, we will. And that's really what characterized us, during the Black mm-hmm. Friday show. Like we really enjoy doing this. So last night we went live at about seven in the evening for an evening update of the World Series of Poker, and people kept coming by, and we know a lot of these guys, and they sat down with us, and we try to have a good time, we try to have fun, try to talk about something a little different, something other than poker for a change, like the actual poker hands. And the players seemed to enjoy that. At one point, we had Maridou and Juan Liu and William Reynolds. They had gone to the bar and they had gotten some drinks, and then they just came. You saw we're right by it. They came and sat down, and they had like this really bar kind of moment where they talked about. Well, they talked about like the ladies' bathroom issue, number one, and then I think they started. They talked about so many other things that were only marginally related to poker. Mm-hmm. And that went on, and we had way more people just stop by. Everyone was just having a good time. And the viewers like that, the viewers who don't get to come to Las Vegas and don't get to come to the World Series of Poker, but who really follow poker closely in this country and outside of it, they really like that. They really like getting to see the poker players so up close, getting to see a different side of them, getting to see them just, unwind a little bit and give us some fun interviews.
It's nice to get a little bit different. We had Brian Rast, so we talked to him, and he'd been over to Macau playing over there. Now, again, everybody hears about it, but very few people are going to actually go there. So we started quizzing him, what's it like? What are the casino rooms like? And he was talking about the smoking there and the that, and it got us to kind of envision what's going on there. A little bit different. We didn't really talk about poker hands so much, but we talked about the environment and the setup and everything like that, and how this is turning in such a massive amount of poker playing over there right now. So that was kind of cool, something a little bit different. So that's the type of things that you try to emphasize?
Yeah, and I think you're right. Like Macau, it's funny because you asked me what do we do, and I could have gone on and on. Like you see, between last year's World Series of Poker and this one, we have a number of different live shows that which become podcasts as well, and that have so many different themes. And one of them is actually centered on the gaming industry. We don't really talk so much about poker We talk about the gaming industry, which has become, which a lot of poker players are interested in ever since Black Friday. People are starting to wonder, like, you know, what's this industry all about? Why did Black Friday happen? And, you know, let's make sure we don't get caught so much off guard again by learning, you know, who runs what. Mm-hmm. And so Macau, like you say, comes up frequently. And I have, you know, I have a very small idea of what Macau looks like. You know, and feels like. And so every time we have a guest on that spends time in Macau, we love talking about Macau. And yes, you're absolutely right. Now, I almost take Las Vegas for granted because I live here. And so I like to learn about Macau. Someone who actually lives in Macau and spends a left hander might take that for granted as well.
Yeah.
A lot of people, you know, cannot, like I was saying, cannot come to Las Vegas, cannot enjoy the World Series Poker, cannot get, you know, media credentials, and therefore cannot... Even if they do come, they can't get the view. Maybe they're just fans, and so maybe they get a little nervous or shy about going up there to talk to Danny Negreanu and then this person and that person for extended periods of time. But we can do that. We can invite Danny Negreanu and Paul Harris, and soon Mr. Phillips, and they'll sit down with us and they'll talk, and it's kind of like the viewers are sitting there because. And I'll let you get to your next question. Excuse me for talking a little bit too much, but. The World Series of Poker is not just about what happens in there. And for those who can't see us, I'm pointing to the actual Amazon and Pavilion rooms. These are the highlights. These are the poker action. These are the highlights. But a lot of World Series of Poker also is what happens here in this hallway, where you guys are at, and so are we. You know, the personalities, the poker personalities, the moods, and you know, and the conversations between players, the drama between players, the laughs between players. And all these things. And these are the things that we try to capture by stationing ourselves right where we are now.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is a whole... If you've never been to the World Series of Poker, you should try to make a trip out here, even if you're not playing. You will never see an environment like this. You walk into a room, there's a couple hundred tables of people playing poker, the rattle of the chips, the whole thing, the tension, that. But you're absolutely right. Any and everybody you've ever seen on TV is wandering these halls.
Yes.
And if you want... to just get a good feel for it. Just come out here and wander the hall sometimes.
Yeah.
You don't have to play a hand.
Right.
It's awesome.
Yeah, you're right. And it's absolutely correct. It's the informality, is prevalent to the point, like, people watch a lot of these poker superstars, you know, who are wearing, hoodies and this casual clothing because they tend to be casual people. And, there's a lot of cameras in there and there's a great effort put into... making this look like a big event that it is, and then there's that kind of Hollywood characteristic, just like, oh wow, these people are on TV and it's all shiny bricks and bricks. But then in these hallways, you know, it's almost like a school hallway. You know, you have your little groups of friends here. There's a cafeteria. There's no hall monitors yet, but you know,
no, that's a very good description of what it feels like.
And they don't get to see that as much. You know, people don't really get to see that. You have a lot of outlets, you know, who try to, you know, do interviews in the meeting rooms and such. But again, a lot of that is very poker focused. Like, oh, you played this hand or you played that hand. I seldom ever ask about specific hands. Number one, because I was telling Paul, I'm an inferior poker player. I would just embarrass myself. Not that I try to make any pretense that I'm any good. But number two,
why don't we go play a sit and go together?
Yes, Mr. Phillips,
heads
up for rolls. But number two, because, you know, again, like, a lot of these are fun people. A lot of these are fun guys.
Yeah.
You know, some poker players, you know, they're more aloof. Maybe they're more just focused on the game. You can't get much out of them. But a lot of these guys are so much fun. Last night we had such a great time, you know, and then you get them a little drunk and, you know, you can go on and on. But
absolutely.
I'd rather see that. I'll get my, you know, how do you play ace king fix, you know, elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. You know, there's a lot of room for that. But at Quad Jacks, we're a little bit more laid back.
I want to ask you about a new product that you've come out with this summer as part of the Quad Jacks network, and that is the Quad Jacks database.
Yes.
Which, to my knowledge, is unique in the industry. So tell our listeners who are in this, because we may have people who are listening to us right now who are going to come out here and they're going to play in a $1,000 buy-in event or a $1,500 buy-in event over the weekend. And when they make day two, they're going to wonder, ooh, I wonder who I'll be sitting with. And that's what the database is built for.
Absolutely. And I'm very glad you asked me, Paul. And I'll give out the URL right away. It's wsopdb.quadjacks.tv. Now, to watch us this summer, you just go on quadjacks.tv. To view the database you're talking about, wsopdb.quadjacks.tv. poker.quadjacks.tv. And what this is, it's essentially a database. Now, poker databases are not uncommon in poker. However, this database is unique in the way that it presents information that is difficult or unlikely to be viewed in that manner elsewhere. What I mean is that people have, like, take the word winnings, for instance. You know, when people talk about poker winnings, I don't think I need to explain to either of you guys that poker winnings isn't everything, or at least it can be a little misleading. Just because somebody wins a certain amount at the World Series of Poker does not necessarily mean that that's actually what they took home. They could have lost even more. They could have lost, a little less than that, and, the payday isn't that big. What the WSOP DB for Quadjacks tries to do is it tries to compile, or actually doesn't try, it does compile wins and losses. Wins and losses here at the World Series of Poker, beginning with last year's database, with last year's information, which is when the World Series of Poker began making it available on their website. So we fetch that information and we present it in a way so that each player is cataloged. If you played an event last year, or if you played any events last year, we know which events you played, what you spent on the buying of that event, and what you cashed for, and then we add it all up, and boom, we have your actual earnings. We have your wins and losses. Mm-hmm. For instance, Mr. Phillips, you played 6 events last year at the 2011 World Series of Poker. Is that correct? Yeah. Wonderful. Including, it isn't.
No, it could be. I'm not
you
sure.
Played, you, well, you played. Probably so. I looked you up. You Alrighty. Played. You played 6 events, including the main event.
Right.
Now you spent a total about a total of $16,000 in buy-ins, and you only cashed in one event. You only cashed in the main event. You
right.
came 557th, I believe, for a payday of about $21,000. But you did not make $21,000 last year, Mr. Phillips. You made only about $5,000 because you had already put $16,000 into the series. Paul is showing
him the page on the database
right now. Is this
correct? It shows for event 58, you finished on 557th, and it says your winnings were $11,295. That's in green because that's above and beyond the $10,000 buy-in.
Yeah, you cashed for $21,000, but minus $10,000 for the buy-in plus $21,000 is $11,000.
So your ROI was 33%.
Actually, that's wrong. Because I didn't pay for my way into the
okay, main event. and you see that is where a little bit of metagame will come into the picture. But related to the WSOPDB, this is the data that is available.
I realize that.
But I think that there's something in here that's even more valuable than that, which is when you make day two
absolutely.
In that tournament,
absolutely.
And you're wondering who's playing there the next
and
day.
And I started out. You're absolutely right. And I started out with this. With the summary of the caches and so to get exactly to that, this is the feature that a lot of people here who are finding out about it are crazy about it. That this is what I've just talked about right now. How's it going? Is we're tracking the data from last year, from 2011. Mm-hmm. This year, as soon as an event finishes at day one, as soon as they can, they make the information for day two available. Mm-hmm. The table draws. Where people are sitting, who else is going to be at that table, but they don't make it that easy to figure out. They just give you a sheet that says, here's a list of everyone that's playing. Find your name, and that's where you'll be sitting. Mm-hmm. What the WSOPDV.quadjacks.tv does is it compiles all of that information, and so if you've made a day two, you can go on the website, look yourself up, okay, and this information is uploaded almost immediately as it's available. Look yourself up, and it will tell you, here's the table you're sitting at. Don't have to go look at any other list. Here's the table you're sitting at in the seat. And by the way, and then you click on your table, and here's everyone else who is sitting at your table. So you have an idea who you'll be playing against the next day. Not just that, but the people who are sitting at your table, you can click on their names as well. And what do we see, Mr. Phillips? We see how they performed at last year's World Series of Poker. So if you have some doubts, like, I don't know who that guy is, click, I see that last year he played this and that and this and that. It will take you to the page that, the kind of page that Paul was showing you earlier. And you can get an idea, at least a better idea than you had before, about how this person performed last
what
year.
I do when I play in multiple day tournaments and I make a day two or a day three or a day four is I always get the seat assignments. I always find out who's at my table. I always do the research on them, find out if they're a pure no limit, if they're a mixed game, if they're whatever, what kind of earnings they've had, what kind of reputation they have. I actually check them out and see if they've got any videos, anything like that, the whole bit. So you're just going to make my job easier.
That's exactly what the point is. It's to make it easier. Mm-hmm. The thing is that this information is already available. You mm-hmm. know, we don't have to strong arm anyone here at the Rio to obtain this information. This information is available,
but very valuable to players who want to know who am I going to be playing against tomorrow.
Yeah, but again, it's compiled and presented in a way that's actually useful for the player. Yep. It's useful for the player who are participating. We have all the table draws, okay, arranged in a way that are easy to look up. Even for people who are railing, we have people asking like, I want to go rail Mr. Phillips. Where is he sitting today? Seating assignments. There's a tab on the page. And enter Dennis Phillips' name, mm-hmm. and it will tell you. He made this day two, or even during day one, he was at this table, this seat. Who else is at that table? Click on the table. And this database just went live a few days ago. We have we just put it out. The layout design is very simple, and we want to make it even more useful. We want to add even more information. It's actually updated and upgraded. Well, it's updated every day, but it's upgraded also. Every day, we really want to make this.
I think it's something that's pretty cool because information mm-hmm. is such an important part of the poker business, especially information on your opponents.
See, I already do that ahead of time. Most people don't, so that was one of the little ways that I tried to have a little advantage over everybody.
So what you're
else.
Saying is you don't like Marco because he's taking away your edge?
Yeah.
Actually, we just introduced this. We showed it to a couple of most players who have seen this are crazy about it. Mm-hmm. You know, we're telling them about it on Twitter. We're tweeting at them. It's like, you know, here's where it's in. They're like, this is awesome. Just earlier today, I'm not going to say who it was, but I was, you know, so you guys saw where I'm sitting. It's right by the poker kitchen. And a player, a bracelet, this person I think has got two bracelets, you know, very, very well-known poker player, walks by, I know this person, say hello, and I showed him the DB, the WSOP DB, and he was playing the mixed max, mm-hmm. which was resuming day two in about 10 minutes. So I'm like, he probably knows where he's sitting. And actually, Marco, I don't. I'm like, well, listen, let's look at the DB right now. So I entered his name, and I showed him. And he didn't know. He didn't even know, you know, where he was sitting yet. And I told him, well, listen, sir, you're sitting at this table at this seat. By the way, click, here's who else is sitting at that table. And he's like, he couldn't believe it. He's like, wow, I was going to find out when I sat down, and then I would have made a line. But he was going to get himself in there. Now as I'm eating, I'm actually going to think, you know, like, okay, here's, you know, and he was thankful that he, you know, had a heads up about who was sitting at that table.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So,
good.
But people are saying, you know, like, oh, well, you know, but you know, losing players or players who are underperforming, they may not want this information out there. Well, to that I say, play better.
Yeah.
Marco, it's a pleasure having you come sit down with us. Congratulations on the success of all the stuff you're doing and the addition of the database. Even if Dennis doesn't like it, I think it's pretty cool. and we appreciate you coming and sitting down with us for a few minutes here.
No, guys, I'm very thankful. Mm-hmm. I'm the one who appreciated sitting here. I'm very thankful. You know, I think you guys do a great job. And let's have you guys on our program again, Mr. Phillips. You are
absolutely.
Due. Absolutely. I already spoke with Paul, gave him the Quadjacks treatment, but looking forward to speaking to you guys again.
All right. Sounds good.
Quadjacks.tv.
Marco Valerio joining us here at the Final Table Poker Radio Show from the Rio in Las Vegas with our continuing coverage of the 2012 World Series of Poker. Our website is finaltableshow.com, and you can download our podcasts via iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And we're on Tuesday afternoons here on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.